In my little chalet in Italian Switzerland, the surrounding mountains, which are not yet Alps, sometimes keep me awake. And so at 3 a.m. the other night, or morning, I listened to the BBC Overseas Service. This, in Switzerland at least, is something of a cheat. We're promised the news in English. Big Ben tolls as an earnest of this. And then the news comes on in Greek or Guoyu. Still, God bless the BBC, that unstillable voice that is evidently telling the truth, even if we don't understand the language. It may be no tribute to it to say that it usually sends me off to sleep, but I'm reminded of the rabbi who rebuked one of his congregation for snoring during a sermon. The rebuked one smiled and said, "Would I sleep if I didn't trust you?" What I heard the other night or morning was an admirable program on the building of the Channel Tunnel. It brought home far more forcefully than newspaper or television the imminence of the completion of this incredible and costly structure, a negative structure, I suppose, really, scooping rather than building. It brought home to me that Great Britain was really going to become part of Europe. The general view of a certain reluctance on Britain's part to be Europeanized, properly re-Europeanized, is that the British prefer to be isolated. This isn't true. There was a brief period in Britain's history when it was essential that isolation from Europe should precede a different kind of internationalization than Europe represented. This was during the Tudor period when Henry VIII broke with Rome. Sir Thomas More, a man for no season, was executed because he felt himself to be more of a European Christian than an English one. He lost his head because of a lack of foresight. England had to establish herself as an isolated maritime power in order to enter a bigger comity than Europe. This comity was, in fact, built by the British, who eventually called it an empire. That empire is now dead, and entry into Europe is no real substitute for ruling it. To become a European component after being an imperial power is something of a humiliation. The British know that they cannot rule Europe, leaving that burden to France and Germany, and they sulk even while they're building their half of the Channel Tunnel. They not only sulk, they feel a certain pragmatic uneasiness about the whole concept of Europe. They know all about the problems of an international comity. I myself served as an imperial functionary for a number of years, chiefly in Malaya and Borneo, and I faced this problem of internationalism at first hand, sweating in shorts, feverish from malaria, and not coolly and rationally in an air-conditioned bureau. The question I asked myself was, how far is an international culture possible? I remember having to teach Mr. Graham Greene's novel, The Heart of the Matter, to a mixed class of Chinese, Malays, Indians, and Eurasians. Mr. Greene was known to be an international writer of great repute. What better introduction to international literature than a novel of his? This novel was intended to be tragic, but my class was highly amused. The hero, a police officer in West Africa, is in love with two women. An impossible situation for the kind of Greenian Catholic that he is. The only thing he can do is to cast himself out of God's presence as a totally unworthy soul, and so he commits the deadly sin of suicide. It was my Muslim students who were chiefly amused. Why, they wanted to know, could he not marry both women, and two more if he wished? I saw then the fallacy of the notion of international culture. I saw it even more clearly when I was commissioned to translate T.S. Eliot's The Waste Land into Indonesian. This, perhaps the greatest of all modern poems, is one of the keystones of international culture. It had to be known even in Southeast Asia. So I commenced a very difficult task. I achieved the first line, Bulan, Abril, Yola, Bulan, Yang, Zalim, Sakali. My intelligent first Malay readers wanted to know why April was the cruelest month. In the tropics, all the months are the same. They doubted that a month could be cruel anyway, this being a property of human beings. When we got to the words forgetful snow, I was in deep trouble. The word thalgi existed to describe the pallor of the brown skin of the beloved, but it did not denote anything that fell from the sky. Thalgi berlupa, forgetful snow. What nonsense. I abandoned the assignment. Indeed, I abandoned the whole concept of the possibility of an international culture. I suppose Shakespeare was about as international an author as one could find.